We've got, at the moment, 9 panelists and a little bit over an hour. So what I've done is ask people if they'll just give maybe a 5-minute introduction of themselves and their families, knowing that it's just scratching the surface. Some people have brought some show-and-tell pictures, and I'm going to proceed more or less in the order that the table of contents of the newsletter, which was roughly from the earliest to the more recent, roughly. And then we'll open the floor for questions and comments. I know there are a lot of folks in the audience who have their own family stories they want to share, and that's fair game. So I want to start with Mr. Nelson Danish, whose picture, photograph, graces the cover of the newsletter.
Thank you, Dale. What people may or may not know about this bulletin, which I think is fantastic, it's the first one ever done just on one town, and it's the largest one they've ever done, and great thanks to Dale and Alyssa for doing this. It really is wonderful. Jewish life in Aiken, it can be said, dates from a century and a quarter ago, when the first man of Jewish faith came to reside in this then village of 1,000 souls, one H.L. Harris Lewis Polaire. What brought him here is unknown, health, business opportunity, or family reasons. One of his Augusta-born granddaughters from H.L.'s first marriage said of him, he was a gentleman farmer. She added that no one ever saw him do any work. He told others what to do. Was this in Happyville, the short-lived commune-style development outside of town? We'll never really know. Wife number one was Anna Sutker, and they had but one child, Addie Rebecca Polaire, who in 1896 became Aiken's first Jewish bride on May 31st, a Sunday, when she was married to Abe Cohen, a merchant of Augusta, in a ceremony that took place on the stage of the Opera House, the Lyceum Hall, long gone from here, some 29 years before this building, our synagogue, was completed in time, for Rosh Hashanah services in 1925. Addie and Abe settled in Augusta, where all their children were born, raised, and educated. Abe Cohen's business was a store named The Beehive, initially a dry goods emporium, offering such as clothing, fabric, hats, and hat pins of some length, for perhaps possible use as a defense weapon when a lady's virtue might be threatened by a masher. Bolts of velvet material, corsages, feathers or plumes, boxes of mother-of-pearl, buttons, snaps, rolls of ribbon, items of quality for the discerning customers in Augusta and surrounding towns in Georgia and South Carolina. Beyond items for adults were children's goods, including shoes. A pair of high button ones was found on the second floor of the store, brand new, never worn, and put on display in a showcase. When mothers pointed them out to their children, the reaction inevitably, "I wouldn't wear those," to which mom would say, "Oh yes, you would." Over time, the business morphed into children's wear and shoes completely, and the store was known for carrying narrow widths. So rather than putting a shorter, wider Mary Jane on a young girl, a proper-sized calisthenic Red Goose or Buster Brown shoe among brands carried by the Beehive went to the customer. The estate of Abe Cohen continued in business from about 1916 until its closing in 1979, when those who ran the business, Pearl Polaire Cohen, executrix, buyer, shoe fitter, and her sister, Minnie Cohen Danish, and another sister, Pearl's fraternal twin, Rose Cohen Antipolsky, all in their 70s decided it was time to shut the shop, and they did. Our friendly competitors just down from 972 Broad Street in Augusta were Rosenthal Shoes and Popkin's Kitty Shop. And if the Popkin name is familiar, it was Ben, Harry, and Herman of blessed memory, who started in 1948 Camp Blue Star on a rented site near Toccoa, Georgia, moving the next year to its current location near Hendersonville, North Carolina. This first-year camper did not return to Blue Star till the summers of 64 and 65. Then I was camp photographer and teacher of photography. As the article from the JHSC newsletter was being researched and put together, this recurring thought, we are all so interconnected by friendship, relationship, membership, or marriage. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Jeffrey, you're up next.
Hello, I'm Jeffrey Kaplan. I am the third generation of my family to be part of Aiken. My grandparents, Sam Kaplan and Ida Kamenoff Kaplan, came to Aiken County over 100 years ago, in either 1908 or 1909. And they had come from New York. They are, like so many of the early Jewish families here in Aiken, they came from White Russia, what is now called Belarus, Greater Lithuania. Almost all of the early Jews in Aiken were Litvaks. And undoubtedly what brought them to Aiken County was the fact that my grandmother's sister and brother-in-law were already here. That was Julia Kamenoff Wolf and Jacob Wolf. So undoubtedly that's why they came here. They came not first to Aiken. They came to Aiken County over 100 years ago, not to the town of Aiken, but rather to the huge metropolis of Wagner, about 25 miles from Aiken. And my grandfather, like so many Jews before and after him, opened up what we call a Jew store. There were no stores in Wagner when they came, and there were no Jews. So they brought both stores and Jews to Aiken, to Wagner, South Carolina. The family was my father was the youngest. Raymond Kaplan was the youngest of four brothers. And he was born in 1927 when he was a boy of three. In 1930, they actually moved to the town of Aiken, where my father grew up. And I could go on and on about the so many memories I have, the stories that my father told me, stories that my mother, who's here today, told me about early Jewish life in Aiken. I will say that being here in this little synagogue brings back so many wonderful memories. This was the center of Jewish life in Aiken, and this synagogue was, next year will be its 90th anniversary. The synagogue was dedicated just in time for Rosh Hashanah in 1925. I remember the late Mandel Saraski, who was for so many years the lay leader of the community. When I was a little boy, I remember him telling me this, how he and Meyer Harris and a couple of others rushed to get the synagogue ready in time so that it would be ready for services on Rosh Hashanah so the Jews of Aiken could greet the new year. One memory that's always stuck with me, I remember my mother telling me when I was a little boy, she says, you know, a handful of Jews built this synagogue, literally a handful. When my father was growing up, by the time of the late 1930s, there were supposedly about 100 Jews in Aiken, which means at the time when my grandparents arrived, it was less than that, obviously, in Aiken County. And I think that we owe a enormous debt of gratitude to these early settlers because of their concern for and desire that there should be Jewish life in Aiken. And this beautiful little synagogue is eloquent testimony to that. And it's really remarkable that all of us who grew up in Aiken, even if we haven't lived here for many years, I left when I was 14, but still have such warm attachment to Aiken. And this gathering today, I think, is very speaks very well to that. I am proud to be a member of the synagogue, even though I haven't lived here in Aiken since I was 14. I'm proud to be a member of the Daf Yeshurun, as my parents and grandparents were before me. And it was growing up in Aiken was a wonderful experience. Despite the small numbers of the Jewish community, they had a very high profile in Aiken. I think three, maybe four or more Jews served on the Aiken City Council. My father was one of them. And it was a marvelous experience growing up here. And I will always, Aiken will always be very, very close to my heart. Thank you.
I'd like to ask Steve Zaraski to speak on behalf of the legions of Zaraskis.
My name is Stephen Zaraski. I have my sisters here, fortunately, with us today. Ann Zaraski came in from Atlanta, and Zaraski Hip. And Brenna Zaraski Serby came in from St. Simon's, and I've seen some folks here that came in that I hadn't seen in many years. When I was told that I was going to be making some remarks today, I thought, well, there'll be nobody here to correct me if my memory fails. But unfortunately, there are some of my compatriots from the past, like Rich Rifkin, who I haven't seen in many years, and Diane Wolf is here, who she and I were the only Jewish people in our high school in the 1960s, I think. But when we grew up here in Aiken, as Jeff said, this was the center of the Jewish community. At that time, we actually had, I didn't realize it at the time, because my family came over, my grandfather, Solomon Zaraski, immigrated here from a little town in Poland in the 1880s or 1890s. My great-grandfather, M.S. Poler, came over at about the same time. The first Jew in Aiken, other than the post-Civil War that we know of, when the immigration wave took place, was probably H.L. Poler. And the reason he came here is because he had some health problems. He had respiratory problems. And Aiken at that time was known as being a healthy environment. We actually had several sanatoriums, I can pronounce that here. And he came here for that reason and opened a store. And then B.M. Zaraski, who was married to his sister, Sarah Anna Zaraski, came. And so that was basically the initial seeds of the more modern Jewish community when they came here. And they all opened stores downtown. And when I was growing up, most of Main Street, Warren Street, probably had five or six Jewish stores on each side. So there were many. My grandfather, just before I was born, was a barber here. His wife had a military shop right next door. And then on the other side of the street, there was B.M. Zaraski, there was Zaraski Brothers. And they're all in competition with each other. They had the same kind of store. I understand the brothers got along fine, the wives not so much. Which I can understand. And one of the Zaraski brothers, if any of you read the article that I penned in the magazine, there were five brothers and one sister. And one was murdered. He was a peddler and was murdered in 1903. And he had two little girls, Dorothy and Mildred. And they were like 4 or 5 years old at the time. And one of the brothers, Sam, took them under, and he was a widower. His wife had already died in Europe. And so after he was murdered, these two little girls were orphans, and Sam, one of the brothers, took them under their wing and raised them as his own and moved to North Carolina. And now that clan is in North Carolina. And one of those little girls' son, Melvin Cohen, is the only Jew in Morgan to North Carolina and has been a mayor there for 30 years. And that's out there. Here in Aiken, tell me if I'm right about that. This is the synagogue that we grew up in, obviously. Things were a little bit different in those days. The women were on this side, the men were on this side. The whole service was in Hebrew. I don't think that the... And I didn't realize it at the time, but fully probably half or more were all my cousins. I just thought they were a bunch of old Jews. I was related to it. But it was an Orthodox service, even though most of the community probably weren't that observant. But that's the way they were conducting their services. And the younger folks, we would sit in the back and ignore what was going on up here. And there was a old gentleman in our community. I sit now where he sat, I'm probably older than he was, Mr. Franz Blau, who would sit on the second row there, or third, I think second, and if he heard a little too much noise in the center row, he would... I did see something in one of the articles that was written by, who wrote that article?
Which one?
It was the one, Mordecai from New York. Oh.
He's not here.
I know he's not here, but he was his mother was one of the Seraskis.
And her name was Persky.
That's Persky.
She was a Seraskis and then she married a person. Who was actually our religious leader the whole time we were growing up in the 50s and the 60s. And he went to yeshiva in Europe, came here, married one of the Seraski girls, and conducted the services. And the whole service was all day long, it seemed like, didn't it? And it was all just godly, and nobody knew what was going on. But at any rate, he said, and I didn't know this, but he said that when he remembers as a child, sitting on the men's side and looking over to the ladies' side, and the only man that had the guts to sit over there with his wife was my grandfather, Saul. And I didn't know that until I read that. But things have changed here over the years. We've always kept a pretty steady number of people, but fortunately, those that have been members here and appreciated the congregation here, even though they're no longer living here in Aiken, they still support us. Like Jeffrey, and we really appreciate that. And we don't know, once you're a member here of the Adopt Assurance Synagogue, you're always a member. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. This is a real challenge to condense centuries of experience
well,
to 5 minutes. I'd like to ask Dr. Marvin Efron to talk.
Thank you. A few years ago when I spoke to Stephen Seraski, I had to tell him that he was my cousin. Our fathers were first cousins. My grandmother was a Seraski. But I'll give you the little history of the Efron family, because at one time there were a lot of Ephrons in Aiken. Now there are none left. We all are scattered. I see a few of them here. This Sandra's mother was an Ephraim. And Raleen and Mitchell.
Which
was over here. Well, good. We're all part of the Ephraim clan. But in tracing the Ephraim clan, it started in doing a genealogical search. Started in the early 1800s. A gentleman by the name of Lazer Efron, or sometimes called Eliezer Efron, was a saddle maker, lived in Kenishin, which is now part of Poland, but at that time was Russia. And he had two sons. His older son was Ariel Joel, and his second son was Morris. Ariel Joel immigrated to Argentina, and we have a large part of our family in Argentina, but they're not close enough that we can really communicate. I've been down there and spoken to him, by the way. And Morris was my grandfather. And Morris married Ida Seraski, who was the only girl in the Bat Bunch. Well, Morris decided to move to the United States because much of his family had come earlier. And religious prejudice, economic opportunities, he left, he had relatives here. He stopped first in 1898, he came across. 1898, came by himself. And stopped in New York and moved on to St. Louis, Missouri, where he had family. The Burgers, who had a big pickle factory. And he became Americanized. He started working, then he went into business for himself. He was ahead of his time. He was in the recycling business. He took burlap bags, reconditioned them, collected them around the city, reconditioned them, sold them back to the manufacturers, because burlap at that time in the early 1900s was very popular for feed, bags, corn, coal, so forth and so on. And he became very, very successful. So after 2 years, he sent for his wife and children. He had three sons. Jake, well, I'll give you the American names because they had Hebrew names, but when they came here, they became Americanized. Jake was the oldest one, and Jake was the grandfather of the ones who are here, Raleigh and Mitchell. The second one was Max, and the third one was my father, Harry. Harry was a newborn baby when Morris left for the United States. And in addition to his wife and three sons coming, Morris's wife's mother also came, Rose Sophia. She was a Seraski, but sort of funny, I don't know whether she was divorced or widow from Mr. Seraski, but her second husband was Blazer Ephraim. So my grandmother and grandfather were not only husband and wife, they were stepbrother and sister as well. She was 50 years old when she immigrated, and she came over in 1900, and they settled in St. Louis because Horace had settled and was very successful there. And everything went well, and by the way, Rosa Fradel got married again to Mr. Cohen in St. Louis. So it's at least her third husband, I don't know. So I don't know if she was a widow or divorced. I didn't know what the legal situation was during those days. I think they're a little bit looser than they are now. But anyway, everything went real well. They had more children. There were seven now. And the youngest one was Lillian, which was Phyllis's.
Oh, right here.
There's Phyllis. Phyllis is another one of the Ephraims too. Her mother was only about 4 or 5 years old when Morris contracted typhoid fever and died, 1918. Well, that sort of changed things. So Ida and her mother decided to move to Aiken to be with her brothers. And they all came down somewhere between 1918 and 1922. And they all became successful. Jake went into the grocery business and had a very nice supermarket. It was very successful. Max started driving a truck, and then he went into the trucking business. He built a large trucking firm. My father was Harry. He started with a filling station. And my mother had a dress shop. Isidore was the next son who was born in the United States. Went into the taxi business, and he owned the area, which is now the bed and breakfast on Lawrence Street, which is a very pretty place. What they call
carriage house.
Very nice. And then the next, they had the four boys, then they had three girls. Annie was a nurse who never married. She was a very successful nurse. Dina married Lou Lusher, and they had no children. And Lillian married Saul Passick from Savannah and had Phyllis and her sister Nancy. So that is a little bit of the history, and they all became successful. All of us were born in Aiken, grew up in Aiken. I will tell you that Aiken was a very good place to live in those days particularly. It was a small town because that was the days before the Savannah Riverside. But for a small town to have five school systems is very unusual. I grew up under segregation. We had the white system, Aiken High School. We had the black high school, which was Schofield. But the big people who had the resorts and the horse people had their own schools. Aiken Preparatory School, which is still in operation, I think, and it's a boarding school, and they went there. And for the girls, I don't know if Formata is still in operation. No. But at one time, when we were growing up, it was. School. And then the Catholic school was St. Angela's, and I think it's changed too. But we had all five. And growing up, we all stayed in our sort of little sets. I stayed with the people I grew up with in high school. And really, I personally had no discrimination. We're all together. And it was a very good place to grow up, and I enjoyed it. And I'm so glad to see my family here, too. Thank you very much.
And we do have a second speaker from the Ephraim family, Sandra Shanker Katzenstein.
Hello, everyone.
Now of Charlotte, right?
Gastonia. Her wedding picture is downstairs. She was married right in front of this office.
Right. Thank you very much for asking me to serve on this panel. I have learned a lot and had some really interesting experiences, but it's so good to be back home. This is home. My parents, Minnie and Sam Shanker, were married in St. Louis, Missouri, first by a justice of the peace and then a rabbi. I called the Register of Deeds in St. Louis to find the exact date. A helpful lady could not find it, but referred me to the nearby county. That lady was really helpful, and it was so interesting talking to her. She asked me what the groom's name was. I had never thought my father was a groom. I told her his name was Sam. I had never even thought of that. Then she asked if the bride's name was Minnie. Well, cold chills went up and down my spine because, again, I hadn't thought of my mother as a bride. Well, and I said, you found it. Well, she sent me a copy of the marriage license. They were married in January of 1937. My mother was born here in Aiken, and she was in St. Louis visiting her grandmother when she met my father. My father was working as a cab driver. When they moved to Aiken, my grandfather helped them open a grocery store, and it was on the corner of Highway 1 and Hampton Avenue. I was born in the Aiken County Hospital that I hear they're going to tear down. I hope not, but I hear they are. I attended St. Angela's Academy for kindergarten, but when I told my mother several times that sister said this or sister said that, she said, "Well, sister, you're going to do what I say." I attended Aiken Elementary School from the first grade until the sixth grade. My mother had also attended this school. I did the usual girl things. I took dancing. I took piano lessons for many years. I was in the Girl Scouts and even in 4-H Club. I took senior life saving and taught swimming, as well as having a summer job as a lifeguard at Johnson's Lake. Is it still there?
No.
The wife of a minister at St. Thaddeus Episcopal Church, and it's interesting that so many times today I've heard Episcopal. Well, that Episcopal minister arranged a blind date with my husband when I was at the University of Georgia. But anyway, the wife was a physical therapist, and she asked me one summer to help her teach adaptive swimming. And so I did that out in New Ellington. The minister, back to that part of the story, had grown up in Warren County, where my husband spent all of his summers visiting his aunt who was a Jewish tobacco farmer. I made lifelong friends growing up here in Aiken, and there's a group of about 14 of us, some from the first grade and some were transplants who came to Aiken with the Savannah River plant. And they remain very close friends. In fact, we get together every year in September or October, either at Edisto, more recently up at Highland Lake Inn. But some of them say that I'm the glue that keeps them together. In fact, it is just such a wonderful thing. And some of you might have seen this email that goes around periodically. It's true what they say about girlfriends. We need each other more and more as years go by. And we've lost two of our girls, and some of them have lost their significant others. It does us all a world of good to be together, and it does me a world of good to be here.
Thank you. I hope you all are getting a little sense of how wonderful it was to work with this group. We've done 20 years of newsletters, and we really never had the buy-in that we had for this one. People obviously love this place. Next up is Sam Wolf Ellis.
Should I stand up here or should I be?
Any place you like.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'll stand back here. I haven't done this in quite a while. Excuse me, there.
When was your bar mitzvah?
Oh, when was my bar mitzvah? 97, I believe. Can everybody hear me?
No.
No? Now you can hear me? All right, my name is Samuel Wolf Ellis. I'm the great-grandson of Jacob Wolf. He was one of the founding members of the Adopt Sharon. I've done stints as a filmmaker, as a writer, and as a musician. And the reason I did that is precisely so I wouldn't have to stand up here and speak in public. This is a little awkward for me, so bear with me. So I have a short prepared statement. In 2006, I wrote and produced a documentary on the Adopt Sharon. I was born in 1983, so I really don't know the intricacies of the history like everybody else does. I'm not a historian, I'm not a genealogist. I just know my little bit of experience on the tail end of what Adopt a Sharon means in this community. But I also wrote an article for the South Carolina Jewish Historical Society, and I appreciate that opportunity. I hope everybody read it, because the movie I produced and that piece of writing are considerably more eloquent than I am, obviously. So I'll give it my best shot. Jacob Wolf and his wife Julia, they were both pillars of the Jewish community and the Aiken community at large. And so those are my great-grandparents. And as being part of the community, my grandparents were significant there. And then, my parents were married here. My siblings and I, we were all bar mitzvahed here. And we assisted my parents and the congregation. And, of course, Mrs. Rudnick, who taught us in Sunday school and was a fabulous, fabulous role model. And we served graciously until 2011. I think we were poised to inherit Adopt Sharon as it's sort of our birthright, because really we're members of one of the longest continually serving families of the Adopt Sharon congregation. We've always been in Aiken. I've never left Aiken. Was born here, raised here, lived here. And so I sort of think it does a disservice to that history to stand here and just rattle off dates and rattle off, because it's not something I really understand. All I can really speak from is what I feel in my heart. And so in my heart, I feel that my heritage is sort of written into, every old floorboard and every cross beam and every pane of glass and every brick that we hope won't fall down within the next, 10 to 15 years. So honestly, I think that the Wolf heritage really speaks for itself. Thank you.
Next one, introduce Irene Krugman Rudnick, who heard about several times today. If you want to sit, Irene, that would be all right.
Sorry. No, after they pull me up from that up.
This is
the honorable.
Thank you so much, Dale. I was introduced one time by one of my boyfriends who, and I said that I was the Honorable Irene Rudnick. He said, I knew her when she wasn't so honorable. I am Irene Goodwin Rudnick, as Dale has said, and I was nicknamed Honey Child, Boogie Woogie Kruge, and Lean Bean Irene, all of which I don't even know is true today. I was born in Columbia, South Carolina, to Gene and Jack Krugman. I was born in the year of the crash, 1929, and it's been crashing ever since. And living in Columbia, we lived on Hampton Street, which is right in downtown Columbia, with my grandfather, Harry Geller. It was a restaurateur and had a restaurant that was called the Ye Olde Tavern. My father had a small store on Assembly Street that was called Square Deal Jack's, because he gave everybody a square deal. My mother assisted him. He started with a hole in the wall, and then he bought a larger store. And it's right across the street. Today it's a parking lot from the Richland County Library. My brother, Stanley Krugman, was the king of the BBGs. And he is a dentist in Coral Gables, Florida. My sister, Dorothy Rose Krugman, is living in Washington, D.C., and she married Jack Goldstein. Ruthie Kaplan, who is the mother of Sam and Laura and Jeffrey, had told me that there was a nice Jewish boy that was stationed at the Savannah River site in 1954, It was a radar unit, and he had just graduated from West Point. And so I told Ruthie that I was going to bring my sister Dorothy down here to Aiken, and would she introduce them? And Ruthie said, well, I don't know him well enough. And I said, well, who does? She said, Rosemary Ram is dating him. Well, the Ram family was a very outstanding family here in Aiken. Mrs. Ram and I taught Sunday school here for many years, and Mr. Ram was one of the most successful businessmen. We had two theaters, the Rosemary and the Patricia, named for his two daughters. And when I called Rosemary, she said, I'm not interested in him. Your sister can have him. And so Buddy took one look at Dorothy, and that was the end of Dorothy. Dorothy was had finished 1 year at Carolina. He was in the regular Army, retired as a colonel. And Dorothy graduated from Texas Western. They've lived all over the United States. And she also taught school there in the Washington area. I went to Taylor School, that was an elementary school in Columbia. And then I went to Waterloo Junior High School and then Columbia High School. I was a day student at the university in Columbia I got an AB degree in political science and English and a law degree. And I was very active in all of my school activities as well as at the university, where I was a member of the debate team, the university players, and many other organizations. After I graduated from law school, I went to New York to try to get a job. And there I met Justine Wise Polea. Little did I know that I would be living in Aiken, South Carolina, and that she had married Shad Polea. He was an outstanding lawyer. She was the first family court judge in New York. And his papers are at the Jewish Museum in New York City. But his family originated here in Aiken. Needless to say that I didn't think I could know everybody in New York, and I came back home. I opened my law office in Columbia on Washington Street, where I practiced, and my first date was Harold Rudnick. He was introduced to me by his sister Rose Rubin, who was married to Hyman Rubin from Columbia. And he said that if he knew 10 years later he was going to marry me, he would have killed himself then. Harold's family, of course, lived here. Mrs. Rudnick was married to Mr. Halpern, and she had a young daughter whose name was Florence. And Florence's daughter is here today with her beautiful daughter, Julie Binky Cohen from Charleston. And that was just Reed Brothers in Charleston where Florence lived. She's the only one that would serve Harold chicken. Everybody else had to serve him steak because there were chickens pecking at him in his yard all his young life. But Harold had a brother whose name was Herbert. He was married to Harriet Rumbacon from Charleston, and those were his siblings, Harold, Herbert, and Rose and Florence. I married Harold in 54. We had two children, Helen and Morris, of whom I'm so very proud. Morris has 2 degrees and 2 children, and Helen has 3 degrees and 3 children. I practiced law with my son at the old Sarasky house, which is parallel to the shul. And the ladies from Charleston who came to interview me yesterday were very impressed with that house, as well as my desk, which is one of the most cluttered places in Aiken. But it was Albert Einstein who said, if a cluttered desk is an indication of a cluttered mind, what is an empty desk? And my brilliant son, with whom I practiced, said I must be a genius. I have six wonderful grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. After I graduated from the university and came to Aiken, I was very fortunate in being able to teach at the university here, where I have taught for over 50 years. First, I was teaching commercial law, which I still do, and telling the same jokes, but I was able to teach other courses also. I became interested in all civic activities and was in politics for many years. I was a member of the House of Representatives for 14 years, and I could not have achieved this without the help of my husband, whom I introduced as my campaign manager and husband. And everybody wanted to know which was first, and I always said campaign manager, of course. I was very active in the synagogue, the Hadassah Yeshurun Synagogue here, and Rabbi Hyman from Augusta said that the translation was that it was a righteous congregation, and it truly is, the translation meaning that. In politics, I was first elected as superintendent of education for Aiken County, and 2 years later, after they did away with that position, I was elected to the House of Representatives. And then when I got in the House, it was Herbert who said, when they redrew the districts, well, they did away with the superintendent of education's office, and now they're going to do away with hiring as a member of the House. But luckily for me, they didn't. Aiken has certainly been very important as far as the Jewish upbringing of my children and my family. I taught Sunday school here for many years and was the president of the shul for over 20 years. Everybody has always been so wonderful and cooperative as far as our synagogue is concerned. And certainly today, the great feat of pulling me off that elevator was they deserve the Congressional Medal of Honor. Aiken has certainly changed in the many years that I have been here. We first were the winter colony, we are known for the horse industry here, as well as the fact that we have many wonderful golf courses, over 38 polo fields, and today we have many more people who have come here to retire. We are a wonderful place for people from all over the country who have come to settle here in Aiken, and we hope that during this weekend, after you have seen all of our universities, our golf courses, and our horse industry, and especially the city guard, that you might come and join the congregation. Thank you.
You know, when I emailed Irene and asked her if she would write a little memoir for the newsletter, she said, oh, well, you don't want me. I wasn't born in Aiken. I've only lived there 60 years. So I said she could qualify as one of the newcomers. But I want to introduce another so-called newcomer who wasn't born in Aiken, but who's probably done more work for this synagogue and specifically for this event than anybody, Doris Baumgarten.
First of all, I would like to take just a few minutes to say that we're just thrilled to everybody who came. We have a lot of outstanding visitors here, members of the historical societies. We have about, a dozen historical societies within Aiken, and I've worked on many of their boards, and their presidents are here, and we do greatly appreciate it. There was someone from Augusta who's on the historical society there, and I lost track of her. But I always say is that nobody works in a vacuum. And you know that. If you've ever worked on anything, I mean, if you gave a party at home or a bridge party, you knew you dragged your husband into calling out the, pulling out the tables and the chairs just to get. So you don't work alone. You always have people. And you met our sisterhood president, who at this time is preparing for the reception after the dedication. So when you see her, please tell her how much we appreciate all the hard work that she and her committee have done. I wanted to, I'll be very brief about our my history. I came here in 1977, not by choice. I was literally dragged here. My daughter, who was a junior in high school, we left two at home in college. You can imagine my feelings. It was not only emptiness, but they let me know that we deserted them. I mean, they didn't go away to college. We deserted them by coming here. Sharon's a junior in high school, and I think she made the best adjustment of them all. So that's why she's back joining us here. In her high school class was Ann Wolf, and there were two other Jewish students, and this was huge. We found out much, much later. I really would like to address the my impressions of the Jewish community then and the Jewish community of today. The immigrants who came over, actually, there were Jewish families settling in Aiken as early as 1856 and 1858, which, as I mentioned before, was before the war. And everybody in Aiken knows, or South Carolina knows, that the war only refers to one war. at that time, even at that early time, our little small Jewish community were having outreach programs. St. Thaddeus, the very beautiful Episcopal church just two blocks down the street, were having a fundraiser in 1856. And the minister there kept great diaries, and Owen Clare has given me copies of diaries that pertain to our Jewish community. And entries in there, there were two entries in which they referred to the Israelite ladies made baked goods to sell in order to help them build St. Thaddeus Church. There was, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, it was a rabbi from Charleston, something like Kodansky or
Poznansky.
Poznansky, who came to Aiken for various reasons, and he met this minister. And he had two teenage sons, one 14 and one 16. And they put on a piano concert recital for the benefit of St. Thaddeus Church. So very, very early, our community was a great outreach program. The early immigrants, most of who came just before the 1900s, they were very young. They came with, after all, if you're immigrating from another country, you're going to be pretty young. The older people were going to more reluctant to stay behind in the old country. So they came young, they came in large numbers, and they all had large families. So this they have this feeling of uniting. And as early as 1905, 1907, in the Aiken Standard and Review, there is an article where they were collecting funds to build a synagogue that early. You have to visualize 1905, they're just off the ship. I don't know how good their English was. They're establishing a business. They've got children to raise. And they came here, I'm sure, with great trepidation. What is life going to be like here? They're fleeing the Tsar. I had great uncles who we never knew the actual family name. They settled in Kansas City, and their employers would still threaten them. If you don't do what we do, or if you don't like them, whatever, we'll just notify the Tsar, and they'll send the Cossacks after you. And they believed that until the Russian Revolution. So the fear of the Tsar coming after them, as today is unrealistic, but that was their greatest fear. They came here looking for freedom. To worship, freedom to be part of the community, freedom to be able to vote. I mean, this is things that we take so much for granted. All the merchants, a good number of them on Lawrence Street, were were all Jewish merchants. And when I first came here 38 years ago, I was told, watch the newspaper so you'll know when the Jewish stores close, because there's no point going downtown on Lawrence Street. And we have a copy from 1927, where there were 8 merchants that are listed saying these stores will be closed, and they list the holidays. I mean, this took nerve. A little small town, these little small Jewish merchants, and yet they were so well accepted. Many, many of them. There are 3 that were nominated by the Chamber of Commerce, as 2 of them were Men of the Year, and 1 was Woman of the Year. Today, we no longer have that Jewish presence on our main street. Our Jewish presence is in our outreach programs. And we have many of us who are working within the community. Irene is a perfect example. First, her activities in the legislature, certainly her teaching at the university. I've been told she is a really tough teacher. So I never audited any of her classes. We have Judith Evans here. I'm sure you're going to be hearing from her shortly. And Judith teaches classes for the Academy for Lifelong Learning, which is for senior citizens. And she teaches Bible courses. Now, I always call it the Bible according to Judith. She makes it very interesting and very amusing. And those classes, they put a limit of 80 on them because the rooms are not even large enough to hold her classes. What are we going to do when you bring your 80 people here to tour the synagogue? We better keep the chairs here. Yes, the chair. Ernie Levinson, who you will be hearing from him later, is known throughout the community for his soccer. I've run into so many people and they say, oh, you're Jewish. Do you know Ernie? And their children all grew up with Ernie as their coach or their referee in many, many respects. In every activity, whether they are in the horse community or they're playing cards or bridge, every activity knows that we are Jewish. We're proud of it. They come up and ask questions all the time. I'm a docent at the Aiken County Historical Museum. And anytime anybody comes in and they have a Jewish question, they ask for Doris. So we do make ourselves known, and it is certainly a very great contribution. Let's see, I did make notes, but I think I have that. So as I say, we're all ambassadors of Judaism throughout not only Aiken, but Aiken County. And the people that are coming here and those extra people who will be coming to the actual dedication of the marker outside are very curious. I'll tell you one brief story, then I will shut up. Was it 2 years ago, the city of Aiken celebrated its 175th anniversary, and the city was sponsoring a citywide tour of historic buildings. So they went to St. Thaddeus, they went to St. Mary's, they went to all these wonderful places, and they asked if we would open the synagogue. And I said, sure, fine. So this very bright-eyed young lady comes running up to me at one of our meetings, and she said, hi there, I'm Stacy. And she said, I'm going to be your traffic control person at the synagogue. And I said, traffic control? You're going to direct traffic up and down? I didn't know what she was talking about. I thought, 50 people, whatever. We had, over a period of 6 hours to help me, we had 1,000 people come through. We had 6 docents, we had posters all over the place. We didn't serve refreshments, so you're going to get your refreshments afterwards tonight. But 1,000 came, and all of a sudden, it had to stop at 4 o'clock. And we see people running down the street and coming here. And I thought, oh my gosh, what happened? Was there an accident? I mean, they're coming to warn us or something. I mean, not, they're running down the street because they knew the event closed at 4 o'clock and word had spread. You have to come to the synagogue. Judith was here. Jews talked about Torah and Bible and Judaism, and word spread throughout the whole town, literally. So this is our outreach program, and this is where we serve the most. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doris. Thank you for the whole weekend. So our last two speakers, Doris has already introduced Ernie Levinson, and I didn't know you were a soccer coach.
That's a good thing you didn't. I'd give you a yellow card. I hate to use the mic. Hope everyone can hear me okay. Okay. I'm Ernie Levinson. I've lived here in Aiken for more than 23 years. That's longer than I've lived in any other place in my life. I say I'm politely referred to as a damn Yankee, which means I came from the north and I stayed here in South Carolina. As so many others, I came because of the Savannah River site, which at the time when I arrived, he had more than 30,000 people working out there. It's now down probably about 10,000. My family and I joined the Aiken Synagogue, and because my son was 10, my daughter was 7, I had joint membership with the Augusta Reformed Congregation. And therefore, every Sunday morning, I drive the family minivan to Augusta, along with up to about 6 kids inside. In addition to getting their religious training in Augusta, there were also two rabbi, Judith Evans, and when my son had his bar mitzvah here in this sanctuary in 1993, he was the first person in more than 15 years to have a bar mitzvah in this building.
No, Sam was the first.
My son was older than Sam.
He was before?
My son was the oldest. I don't want to argue with you, but we'll work out the numbers later. Okay. But there are two stories I'd like to say regarding Bar Mitzvah. Because we're members of the Augusta Wolway Temple, Rabbi Parr was invited to lead the Bar Mitzvah, and he graciously agreed. Rabbi Clemson is here. I don't think he's heard this story before, but he'll enjoy it. Unfortunately, the Board of Trustees weren't as happy that he led the service here and was not in their sanctuary, so it was time for my daughter to have her bat mitzvah. The rabbi couldn't come. And I said, that was fine, and we just had a led by a lay leader at that time, was Joe Cohen, and we didn't have a problem. It was no issue. The rabbi was led to train her along with Judith. And we just did it ourselves, which is the way we've done this for a long, long time. The second notable event is the fact that we turn the light. The one that's above me now, and is always lit, of course, was out for that occasion. You know, this is like a quirk or thing that may happen and probably be a problem somewhere else. But in this congregation, it was just something that happens. We use the fact we have no full-time rabbi, and we don't have strict formality, but we have a warm congregation that accepts whatever is there, and we go with the flow. I'd like to relate another story about this community. I first came to the South in Chattanooga, Tennessee in 1977, and for a boy coming from New York City, it was quite an experience. You know, I went to watch Saturday Night Live, and I turned on the TV channel, and there, Gospel Hour, Gospel Hour, Gospel Hour. And there were still vestiges of discrimination back then. The downtown department store still had up the sign pointing downstairs for the colored restroom. And a swastika was chalked on my driveway. However, when I came to Aiken, I never saw or experienced any such discrimination and always felt safe and comfortable. And you can imagine my excitement when the first person I was scheduled to meet at work was Jerome Cohen. However, we could use the lift to raise my jaw from the ground when I found Jerome was black and had a cross on his chest. As you'll hear from so many, I feel home in this sanctuary, My children, just like Sam said, think of this as their synagogue. And I try to do my part, having served as treasurer, religious leader, president, and now secretary. And I assure you, trying to follow Miss Irene is a tough act. However, I'm forever in the debt of those families who founded this synagogue almost 100 years ago, and the many others who've kept it going. So this northern kid could find a place in it and he could call home.
Definitely not least, and I guess our newest newcomer, Judith Evans.
I must tell you, when I listened, first of all, it's an honor for me to be here. When I listened to the old people here, not the old people, because I'm older, but the people that told the stories about the family. And I'm sitting here and I say, if someone will ask me to tell stories about my family, I don't know anything. I'm a Holocaust survivor. I was born in 1932 in Germany. All what I have is a brother. No stories, and I envy you. You sit here and the feeling of a family, and I feel that I'm a part of this family. This is what is so amazing. When I came to Aiken with my second husband, my first husband passed away. After the Holocaust, I immigrated to Israel. I was living all my adult life in Israel. I was very busy in education. Then my husband passed away, and I was a widow for 16 years, and I'm always joking, I was an orphan and a widow. So I married again, and I married an American, and I came to America, and he got a job here in Savannah River. I came to Aiken. And I felt, I don't know where I am, because I was useful since after the Holocaust then, to live in Israel between Jewish people, and I spoke Hebrew. You still can hear my accent in English. And then I said, okay, you know what, there's a Jewish synagogue, and Frank Cohen, another girl, says, come to the synagogue. I said, what synagogue? I never went to the synagogue in Israel, because in Israel people don't, if they are not Orthodox, they don't go to the synagogue. What will I do here? And I came, and you know what, I immediately felt like a family. I mean, even we are the same age, I somehow felt, you know, I found a mama, a Jewish mama. It's a feeling that, and after a while I said, why can't I teach here? I can teach, I can prepare for bar mitzvah, I can do something. And I offered, and my memory was that Sam was the first one. I perhaps you will forgive me my age. The first celebration of bar mitzvah, that I prepared this child for bar mitzvah. Sam is here, I thought the family is there. When I started to teach it, started to teach in my house, and I prepared them for bar mitzvah, and I explained what Judaism is all about. Finally, I became like the speaker for here around, I go to all the churches. I'm invited to explain what Judaism is. And they discover that Jesus was a Jew. I explain actually what Jesus would have done if he got up in the morning. He would put in the tefillin. And I bring a talis, and they are surprised. And I'm teaching I'm at Doris State in the university. Now I have a course explaining Judaism. 85 people signed up. And the feeling that, you know, people want to hear and want to listen. I talk about the Holocaust. So, and I'm always, you know, welcome. There are people that I ask questions. But it is the feeling that I'm doing something and that people are interested in Judaism. It makes me feel good. Because I know what the discrimination is. And the feeling that you are my family makes me feel good too. And thank you for letting me speak here, because I don't have a history really to tell. Thank you.
Doris, we have a little bit of time for questions before the dedication. I'm going to forego my question and turn it over to the audience, because I know there are people who come with things they want to say. Where's Amy? Okay.
Sure. I am the granddaughter of Sophie Halpern Panitz Rudnick. This was grandmother and her first husband, Raphael Panitz, along with her, came from Białystok, Poland. And they actually married in New York, and he became ill. And they had a relative here, and so they moved from New York with my mother, who was 3 at the time, so it would have been around 1910, and they came down here. Unfortunately, he died at the age of 26. And he's the first Jewish person to be buried in the Jewish cemetery here. I spent a lot of my childhood, my mother would bring us from Charleston, and we would stay with grandmother and for a week or 2 weeks, and Aunt Rose Rubin, Mama's half-sister, came from Columbia with Jane and Honey Jr. And grandmother lived on Pendleton Street, which has just been ruined. I'll tell you, it was such a beautiful street, and where the cars are now parked was a wide grassy place to play, similar to what's out here. And I have a lot of pictures here, but anyway, my mother grew up here, and she went to Aiken High School, and then she went to Winthrop College. She was a lot older than her half-brothers and half-sister. She was 9 years older than Aunt Rose, and then came Uncle Jaime and Uncle Harold, whom I remember when he went into the Second World War. We all came, and I couldn't understand why everyone was crying. He served in France, and I have a couple of wonderful letters to my mother, which I will let you have, and pictures of him, and Uncle Herbert, who was a man of many stories, and he amused the whole city of Aiken. And I just loved coming here. I felt like this was a second home. Mama told me many stories. One thing I'll tell you that was a secular thing, there was a dime store here. Someone mentioned the 2 dime stores. And every Thursday, you could get a paper phonograph record. And I can remember the one that we had. It was brown, and it was just a record on one side, and it was $1 Million Baby at the 5 and 10 cent store. And we played it and played it, and I don't know where it is. Probably my sister that took it. I will tell you that when Mama went to Winthrop College, and she met Sifra Savitz. And Sifra Savitz was a first cousin of my father, but she was going with my father's brother, first cousins who married Uncle Paul. And Uncle Paul wanted to see her, and she wouldn't see him They were to meet in Columbia. She wouldn't see them, him, unless she could bring along a friend. And she brought Mama, and he brought his brother Joe. And that's how Mama and Daddy got together.
There's no way to hold them open, though, is
it? When Mama brought my father, who weighed all of 118 pounds, okay, and meet my grandmother, she fainted. But it all worked out.
Mrs.
I love Aiken, and I thank you very much.
I really hate to interrupt, but we have other invited guests who are arriving for the dedication of the marker, so we're going to have to end this session. Steve, we will make remarks outside. We're thrilled and excited that you all could come, but because there's such a crowd outside and a crowd in here, after the dedication, we were having people in.